It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. Do you remember where you were when the Hale-Bopp comet passed over this Earth? Do you remember what happened next?
On March 26, 1997, in a mansion inside a San Diego gated community, 39 people were found dead.
You could see the bodies are coming out. I hope that's not a body.
Neatly tucked into bed, dressed in black t-shirts, sweatpants, brand new Nikes, and armbands that read, Heaven's Gate Away Team.
They ingested phenobarbital and a liquor as vodka. They just drunk it, laid down, and basically went to sleep.
Who does that, right? That was incomprehensible. It was crazy. But my next guest says one person's crazy is another person's normal. Glenn Washington, welcome to you.
Hey, Bill. Great to be here.
It's good to talk with you again. KUOW listeners know you for your show, Snap Judgment. But your latest project is about the Heaven's Gate cult. This happened 20 years ago. Would you remind us more about what happened there?
Sure. I think the Heaven's Gate came to consciousness, came to national consciousness when one morning people found these bodies in a San Diego mansion. And they were followers of one man who thought he was leading them to ascend to the next level on and get on a comet and ride away.
Yeah, a comet. It was the sign that a UFO was coming to take them away, something like that?
Yes. Specifically, they believed there was some sort of extraterrestrial body behind the UFO, and they were going to get on it and fly away with them.
And as I said, all this sounds weird, otherworldly, impossible to believe. Why did it make some sense to you, Glenn?
Well, I remember when I first heard about this. I was in a bar, and I was looking at this thing, and it kind of these police pictures came up, and everyone stopped for a minute, and everyone was looking at it. And, 90 seconds in, everyone got back to drinking again. But I couldn't do that. I kept staring. I wanted them to turn the TV back up because I had grown up in an organization that seemed very similar to what they were talking about, the Heaven's Gate community. And given another twist, one more turn or something like that, that my group could have done something very, very similar. And that's what got my interest in this. My interest level was at 11 when everybody else's was maybe at 3.
Right. You grew up in this, at the time it was called the Worldwide Church of God, and you've called it an apocalyptic cult. You had a charismatic leader. How did he say the end times would go down?
It was a terrible picture. He talked about a beast power that was going to come and create a great tribulation, and he painted the picture of this beast power. And as a kid, I didn't quite understand what was happening because some of it was metaphorical, but it was going to be bad. And everyone who didn't know the special knowledge and the special secrets, you all were in big trouble. And even those of us who understood, probably only one third of us would make it out to pass this great tribulation. There's a lot of talk in my organization that we were going to escape this worldwide catastrophe by hiding out in the caves of Petra in the Syria and Jordan, and stay there for some 3.5 years while everyone else burned.
Well, Glenn, beast power, apocalypse, and tribulation, honestly, it sounds like the Bible to me.
Well, that's the whole thing. And Heaven's Gate was largely, they may even have seen themselves as a type of Christian. The Bible played a very, very big role in their theology. At the end of the day, it's all about faith and belief. I'm not comfortable necessarily saying that one type of belief is more crazy than another. It's all in the end about what do you believe this book, these people, these teachers are saying to you.
I want to talk about that idea that one belief might not be more crazy than another. I just, before we leave your apocalyptic cult, Glenn, do you mind me asking, I'm sure you thought of this. Do you think you would have taken fatal drugs, as the Heaven's Gate members did, if you had been asked to?
I left my organization when I was in my late teens. Mm-hmm. But previous to that, I was a true believer. And I would like to sit here, Bill, and tell you, no way, I wouldn't do anything crazy like that. But I was a true believer. I did believe at least the general principles of the group I was born into. And I think about it all the time. Would I have drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak? Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't know. I don't know. I do know this. I've guesstimated that 70% of the people I grew up with would. And since, you know, I've been doing Heaven's Gate and talking about this project and going back and speaking to some of the people I grew up with, and they keep telling me, nah, man, you know, the real number's closer to 90%.
Hmm. This is Glenn Washington. You know him from Snap Judgment, and his latest project is about the Heaven's Gate cult. And Glenn, why? What do you know about why some people believe crazy cultish things? Because you've been there.
Again, is it crazy or cultish? I think when you talk about a cult, I think it's important maybe to help define it. You're talking about someone, a group with a charismatic leader, mm-hmm. A group, and the beliefs themselves, for some whatever reason it is, instead of putting you into the community at large, they oftentimes make you reject that community at large. And oftentimes as well, there is an apocalyptic aspect. And you put all these things together, a charismatic leader, an inward-looking group, and an apocalyptic thing. And then you start getting the makings of a cult. Now, the beliefs themselves, you know, like I said, people believe a lot of things. And
yes.
I don't know that one particular belief is any more crazy than another. I just know that these things, it's really about the community. And it's a community that brings people into these organizations, and sometimes it's a community that's gone astray when something horrible like this happens. The community, people who are searchers, people who are those people looking for their own divine, those oftentimes are the best kinds of people. And maybe it's easy to subvert that sort of real inclination to be a better person. And I think that what oftentimes keeps people in these groups is that maybe this is the first time they felt love. Maybe the first time they felt acceptance in a certain way, that they are actually a part of something bigger than themselves. And when you don't have that and you get a taste of it, it's really hard to walk away.
You know what, Glenn? You are describing almost word for word what a former white supremacist told us on this show last week about that. That's how he described neo-Nazi groups. Do you still think that one idea is no more crazy than another?
I think that we're in the middle of witnessing a collective grasp, a collective seizing of absurdity in our whole political system. I don't think that it's crazy. I don't think that believing that Hale Bopp is a extraterrestrial is any more crazy than ripping apart families on national television because one person was born in another country 30 years ago. I think that I'd rather believe in Hale Bopp.
When you can relate, Glenn, to somebody who believes something crazy, how does that affect your life? I mean, your job is to get inside other people's stories. Are there no stories that challenge your ability to say, hey, a story is a story?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I think the best storytelling is about empathy. And can you, as you just said, Bill, can you feel someone else's story? And yes, I think my perspective has given me access to other people's experience in this way. But there's lots of things. I think the thing that's so hard to understand is how we've, I think there's something going on right now, and maybe it's an American stain, that we've got to find somebody to hate. And maybe hate is the opposite of empathy, but I think that the stories that I do find hard are people who really and truly do hate someone for another reason. You mentioned that the white supremacists, and a lot of them are radicalized for one reason or another, but that comes out of, I'll join your group if you give me love. But even then, when you really talk to some of these guys, and they'll mouth platitudes that someone told them, but do they really hate brown people at the end of the day? Sometimes I think yes, sometimes I think no.
So are you saying sometimes you think, you know, that's a story. I used to believe crazy stories. People need they need a story, and they need community. And these people, they could drop that story and pick up a different one. You don't like how? Is that
people
what you're
do.
Getting at?
People do drop their story. I mean,
the former white supremacist. I was talking to him, and I said, you know, I want to talk about. It feels scary that you're to know what you're capable of. And he stopped me. He said, was capable of. And it just hung in the air, you know.
I'm right with you here, Bill. I think that it is scary to see yourself doing things that you can't imagine anymore. But I don't think that anyone gets away from it. I think that it's always a good reality check to think, oh, the minute you think you're so much better and removed from someone else, to maybe give yourself pause to examine your own ways that are broken of looking at the world. And I am specifically about this white supremacy stuff. These guys can do horrible things and engage in horrible acts of crazy hatred. And you see them foaming at the mouth. And it all seems, their belief systems, it sometimes seems so fragile that in spite of this raging person, do you hate your half-sister? And then you see them switch. It's just, we don't make any sense, our beliefs. I think we got, that's one thing you learn in this whole thing is like, I guess stop asking people what they believe and getting into what they do. At least it makes more sense for me.
This is something I talk about a lot. I mean, my wife, my coworkers are listening to this. Oh, no, it's another Bill Radke talking about how we are storytellers. That's, you know, I describe it as I'm sitting in my own personal movie theater watching the Bill Radke Short Film Festival,
yeah.
Where I describe the world. Anyway, I'm with you, Glenn, and you're a professional listener and teller of stories. What do you do with that information then? How do you go out in the world? What can we take away from that way of looking at the world as a festival of stories?
I take away this. This is a big deal for me.
Me too.
When I was little and growing up in this cult and, you know, and it had a white supremacist element to it and had a bunch of misogyny element to it. And I remember being so crazed, afraid, and crying, and being in a closet. What's wonderful about narrative, what's wonderful about personal narrative, is that you can end your story where you want it to be. And oftentimes, if you ask somebody on the street what their story is, they'll tell you something that is rooted in trauma because they haven't gotten past it. they'll tell you their story stops maybe in that closet, maybe with that person, maybe at the end of that boot or that belt or that strap. But what's so great about personal narrative is that you can go back and you can grab that little person's hand and you can end that story wherever you want to do it. And when you take your, when you do that, when you go back and take yourself and you put yourself not locked in someone's screaming closet, but where you want to be, that doesn't just change the story. It changes the storyteller. It changes the person who's telling that story. It changes you. And I cannot emphasize enough. I can't tell you how wonderful it is to get back your own story from the demons who maybe have caged it and stolen it from you.
That is so true, because we know that stories change. That's what stories do. So when you think of it that way, you know, possibilities open up. I want to ask you, because we just have 2 minutes left here, Glenn, that so you've said that storytelling has the power to remind us of our humanity. And some people think our stories are driving us apart because we've gotten so addicted to our own brand of stories. How do you reflect on that?
I just don't think we're telling each other. We're not listening or not telling stories at all anymore. I think I remember watching Crossfire and having, you know, these two idiots braying at each other and feeling dirty at the end of it. And then listening to someone actually tell me a story. And it was a story that touched on a lot of elements of race and class and of culture, but it wasn't, but all they were doing was saying what happened to them. And the listeners, all of a sudden, they weren't left and right anymore. They were just the audience. This happened to me. And we don't do that anymore. We don't give anyone the courtesy of listening to what happened to them. And we try, it seems like this maddening, a kaleidoscope of media, its actual purpose is to stop empathy. Again, maybe that, do we think it's a real good idea for American children to have their parents torn away from them? If we actually listen to the story of one of those kids, would we inflict that pain on them? The only way you do that is by stopping empathy. And so at the end of the day, I don't think we're telling each other our story. I think we're forbidding that process and just getting deeper and deeper into a world without story.
Glenn Washington is the host and executive producer of the storytelling podcast, Snap Judgment. The next episode is a special that was 1 year in the making. It's called Counted, an Oakland Story. And his most recent project is a podcast called Heaven's Gate, which at heart is a story about belief, and we're tweeting out a link to that show. Glenn Washington, it's great to talk with you. Thank you for joining us.
Great being here, Bill. Thank you.